Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Family of Faith, a Faith Bible Church podcast about God's design for the family, with your host and pastor of Family Ministries, Paul Funchess.
This is Family of Faith, a podcast by Faith Bible for Faith Bible, and this is going to be a hard one to talk through, but one that's greatly needed. This was a question that came in. This podcast is in response to a question that came in. Today we're going to talk about the loss of children, the loss of a child, and some of the issues surrounding the loss of a child, the death of a child. This is something that many of our families here at Faith Bible have gone through, and even yet still are going through. Presently, even we have families that are enduring this suffering, and we want to help them. We want to be encouraging to them, and we want to help and equip those around the people in our body that suffer in this way. We want to answer some of the more difficult questions. And be a real resource for you. So, we're gonna talk through that today. I've invited Brian and Brian. I wasn't planning on doing this, but just share with people some of your own experience.
Yeah, I think most people know that Michelle and I's first daughter, Abigail, passed away when she was 3 years old. That's been 24 years now.
Wow.
Since that happened, so it seems like a lifetime ago. But she had some complications at birth and ended up with cerebral palsy, a pretty profound case of it, and just really her body stopped shortly after her third birthday in April 1994. So it was not an unexpected thing for her to die early, but we were probably anticipating a long, drawn-out sickness of some kind, and instead, God in his mercy just took her home one night in her sleep, and we found her the next morning. So, we dealt with that for years and learned a lot through it.
Well, that's why I asked you to come in today. I know this is something personal to you, and you obviously have great wisdom in a lot of other areas, and I know you've walked this path. So, we want to help people today and be an encouragement to them. There is hope. There's always hope, and there is always help that can be given from God's word and from God's people. And we want people to believe that.
Yeah.
And to live in light of that. I think there are some categories that are helpful as we think through it, as we really try to grapple with this difficult issue. What are some of those categories that we really need to think through?
Well, I think one big category is why. Why do these things happen? How is it that sin and death can hit us at a time of life like that so early? I think another obvious question is what happens to the souls of children who pass into eternity, and how do we sort that out theologically, even? Like, what does the Bible say about election and God's sovereignty and an age of accountability? That sort of thing. And then I think another broad category to talk about is just responding to the grief, and how are we to think about that? Are there appropriate or inappropriate ways to grieve, and how can we as fellow Christians come alongside those who are grieving and comfort and encourage them in that, and provide understanding to them as we interact?
Let's think through that first question of the why.
Sure.
Why would this be the plan of a good God?
There's a sense in which it's impossible to answer the why question in every particular or in a specific case.
Right.
But in a general sense, we all know the Bible clearly says that death is the product of sin. And when we say that, we're not saying that the death of an individual child is a specific punishment or
a result of their sin. Right.
Exactly.
Right.
In fact, in John chapter 9, there was a man born blind, And the people there ask Jesus, you know, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Jesus said it wasn't that he or his parents sinned. It was because God intended to show forth his glory through this
right.
man. And so it's not a direct cause of a specific sin, but rather death itself is the product of sin in general. And so death seems normal when people in their 80s and 90s die. It seems abnormal when people who perhaps are not yet come forth from the womb pass. And yet death is normal. It's a product of our being a sinful human race at this point. And yet death, even an untimely death, if you will, we'll call it that, is something for which Christ came and died.
Yeah.
Death is, it grieves the heart of God. Every death grieves the heart of God. We see Jesus weeping at the tomb of Lazarus, and he wasn't just, he wasn't weeping because Lazarus died, because he knew he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead. He's really weeping over the sorrow and the sadness that was overwhelming everyone who was suffering because of that death. And so Jesus' death overcame death forever.
That's
what redemption does. So there'd be no more death, no more pain, no more sorrow, no more crying, no more tears.
Yeah.
So
I think sometimes those who consider themselves more theologically minded, when I'm hearing that, I've seen people who try to answer the question why so theologically that it becomes a cold answer. You know, I really appreciate what you said about the fact that God is grieved over death, that God, you know, Jesus demonstrated that by weeping over the death of Lazarus. That's real. That's a real grief that Jesus is experiencing. And sometimes when we seek to answer it theologically, we become cold and make God out to be someone who is just a cold determiner or ordainer of things and has no feeling.
Right.
It's really important not to go down that road. And that Christ has come and his death has conquered death. Help me if this is going off target, but what then would we say to someone who's experiencing this or trying to grapple with the why question? What would be a good response? What would be a good answer for them if I'm trying to come alongside them? What kind of things do I need to say? What would be good for me to say?
Well, I think reminding one another together about the hope that is the gospel and the redemption of Christ should it be first and foremost that Jesus came to conquer death, right? And there will come a day when death will no longer sting, and we have the confidence that that will be true when we're all there together forever in God's eternal kingdom. So that's a hopeful thing. And then I think there's the broader truth that God is causing all things to work together for good to those that love God and are called according to his purpose. And he's conforming us into the image of Christ. And so there's always the matter of how does God want me to change and grow through my experiences. And then God is always stirring our hearts to see him and to worship him.
Yeah.
And so worshiping in our suffering is so key, laying hold of all that you know to be true about God's character and attributes is so vital in the midst of grieving over death. Just laying hold of what you know to be true about God is absolutely vital. And doing that together, just being willing to be a shoulder to cry on and to cry with as people wrestle to do that. Because it's hard to do that in the midst of grief.
So what happens to the soul of a child when a child dies?
I think you can confidently assert that the souls of all children who die pass into the presence of God in heaven. Again, you almost have to be theologically cold and calculating to believe otherwise. you know, some would be quick to jump on the doctrine of depravity, for instance, you know, altogether in iniquity I was conceived, and that because the soul of every human is depraved, therefore the possibility is there that they would go to hell as a punishment for their depraved nature. But you have to be pretty cold and calculated, I think, to draw that conclusion. There's a lot of passages of scripture that actually talk about the nature of a person's moral condition in infancy and young childhood. You know, we tend to use the phrase age of accountability, and that's not a biblical phrase at all, but it does communicate an idea. At what point does a young person reach a point of moral culpability?
Yeah.
Well, wherein they will answer for a willful choice of unbelief and rebellion toward God. And the Bible doesn't give a crystal clear answer to that, but it does in various places talk about young children. Jeremiah 2:34 and Jeremiah 19:4, it talks about children being innocents, that they are in a condition of innocence and they don't know good and evil. Deuteronomy 1 talks about children having no knowledge of good and evil, and that was the basis for which that they would be the generation that would inherit the promised land, because they weren't the ones that rebelled and rejected God's good promises. So it was because they didn't have that knowledge of good and evil. So many times in Psalm 22, Psalm 139, talking about God forming and caring for babies in the womb, you can see God has a special love and affection for those that he grants life to. And so we believe correctly, life begins at conception, and God is knitting those children together according to his plans and purposes, even from the beginning, and has already, in some sense, set his love on them.
Yeah.
There's another passage in 2 Samuel 12. King David loses one of his children to death and is a direct product of his sinful choice. It was something God said he was going to do as part of chastening David for his sin. After the child passes, David is already grieving and fasting and mourning, knowing that the child's going to pass. And after the child passes, he gets up and he clothes himself and cleans himself up. And everyone's like, well, why were you so sad before he died? And now your disposition has changed. And David says, well, before he died, then there's always a chance God could show mercy. But now that he's died, there's no reason to fast. I know where he is, is essentially what David says. He says, I will go to him, but he shall not return to me, he says in 2 Samuel 12:23. And David expresses confidence that wherever he's going in death, and we know he was a believer, that is where his child is. And again, a striking example of what happens when infants die. And David had that confidence, and I believe we all can as well.
That's good. You have a book there by John MacArthur that's kind of helped walk through that, and many people know about that, but I think it'd be a good resource. It's called Safe in the Arms of God by John MacArthur. That'd be a good resource for you if you have questions about this topic. But theologically, you know, we believe in election, right? God has elected some to be saved.
Right.
How do we grapple with that as people who firmly believe in the doctrine of election? How do we think through that?
Right. And often that's sort of the question, how do I know if my child was elect?
Yeah.
And if I can't know he was elect, then I can't know that he went to heaven. So, I mean, there's a couple of layers in answering that. I think one is to acknowledge, first of all, that no one goes to heaven apart from God's grace, that salvation is always by God's grace. So that's true no matter what. That's true for you and I. That's true for any baby that might pass away. Apart from God's grace, there is no salvation. There is no heaven. So on another level, thinking about election in a way that it becomes just that one box that has to be checked in order for you to have confidence in God's salvation for your baby is not really thinking about election consistently with everything we ought to be thinking about God's sovereign decree. In other words, election is not something God does over here on the right, and God's sovereign decree for all things whatsoever shall come to pass is this, these other choices that he's making over here on the left. God's election and sovereign decree are working in perfect concert with one another. They're completely consistent with one another. In other words, the same God who's decreed the death of your child is the same God who is in eternity past setting his electing love on that child.
Right, right.
And so to talk about election as being sort of the magic box that has to be checked for you to be certain is forgetting that all of those things work together
right.
and flow out of the same heart of the same gracious, redeeming God.
And yeah, so the God who is gracious to save all of those who die in innocence,
mm-hmm.
the God who is gracious to save, which is what we've already established, he has decreed the death of that child, and therefore that child has been elect or has been made elect.
Right.
Right.
That's how I would say it.
Yeah. So, that's wonderful comfort. And I hope that's clear. I hope that's clear for those listening.
I do think those questions become harder as children get older.
Right.
Because there does reach a point where children have the knowledge of good and evil.
Yeah.
They have the moral culpability of choosing or not choosing, rejecting, rebelling. And the Bible doesn't give us where that magic age is. And I wouldn't even say it's the same for every child. Every child
for
has
sure.
a different level of intellectual and for moral
sure.
maturity.
The Romans 1 is the passage that helps me, you know, in that those people that are without excuse are the ones who know and can see clearly who God is and yet have chosen to deny God and not give him thanks for who he is, worship him as he is to be worshiped. So they are without excuse because they can see clearly creation and all that can be known about God and his creative power. His eternal nature.
They've reached a point where even in that passage, it says they're making a moral choice to suppress the truth
they're
and
suppressing
unrighteousness.
The truth. Right. Yeah. So I would say until that point, until someone is able to actually see and deal with that truth of who God is and suppress that up until that point. And it's different for every one of us. But I would say that this even applies to those who are born without cognitive abilities and live even 40, 50 years without the ability to reason, without the ability to actually think through these things. I would say the same truth applies to them.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about responding to grief, help us think through that.
Yeah, there's different situations that bring about that grief. So you have, the first trimester miscarriage, still a grievous situation that's going to bring sadness to your heart. A baby that's alive full term and then is stillborn, dies in utero just days or hours before birth is kind of a different layer of grief. And then the child who lives just for hours or days or a few short weeks can produce a different kind of grief. And then like our daughter lived 3 years, we cared for her. And every one of those situations is different, and it would be unreasonable to think that the grieving process has to go a certain way. I think everybody grieves differently, and as those just called to weep with those who weep, I think part of our role is to just come alongside and encourage and comfort and weep, not put expectations on people for how they need to or ought to or even must respond in those situations. There aren't stages they have to go through to be a complete whole person and to grieve properly. That's an incorrect way to think about it. In fact, what traditionally were called the stages of grief were formed by, you know, psychologists making observations of unredeemed people. And the Bible clearly tells us that we do not grieve as others who have no hope.
Yeah.
And so we would expect the process of grief for the believer, especially with children, where we can have the confidence of heaven. We'd expect the process to look very different than it would in other circumstances. So, you know, everyone's going to have a different way of processing what has happened and coming to a point of closure and trust in God's purposes and contentment in it. And we really need to give people the space to do that. So if they need to have a memorial service for an early trimester miscarriage and name the child, then please do that. And everyone should give them the space to do that. And some don't process it that way, and it's not wrong either.
Right.
And so you just need to let people process their grief the way they need to.
Yeah, this is really, really important, because I do think we have expectations for people and how they should grieve. We have been influenced by some of this cycle, you know, teaching of psychology that says there are stages you have to go through, and every situation is different. So I think that's really, really important.
Yeah. I know when the other thing that happens is, you know, weeks, months, maybe even years after the loss of a child, grief can, it can come in waves, even in seemingly random or unexpected moments. I'd said, you know, it's sort of expectation of early death for our daughter. Just statistically, it was unlikely she would live much past 10, if that. And so the thoughts of her passing they weren't new, right? It came at an unexpected time in an unexpected way. But we were ready enough for it that the grieving process was pretty quick, and not, it's hard to say quick, but there was a rejoicing in the midst of our grieving. It happened really, really fast. You know,
and there were probably people, it's like, wow, that didn't really affect them the way, you know, it should be more devastating, or there should be a different reaction from you right now.
We were rejoicing because our daughter, who could never see or hear or walk or talk, what we knew was now dancing on streets of gold, you know? So, and we were speaking of that together as the paramedics were working on her. And so there was a rejoicing in the midst of our grieving. It happened really, really fast.
Yeah.
But months later, after the funeral, we went back to the cemetery where her body was laid to rest, and they had put the stone, the memorial stone, in place. And I lost it.
Yeah.
And that was the hardest day for me.
Yeah.
And I think it was just, that was kind of the finality, right? There was nothing left to do to honor her and care for her. And that just felt so final and ugly. And I hated it. And I remember in my heart just crying out. I keep hearing people say, "Oh, death, where's your sting? Oh, death, where's your victory?" And that day I doubted that was true.
Yeah.
Because I did not feel it in my soul that it was true.
Yeah.
And because it stung, it stunk.
And
for days I kind of wallowed in guilt for feeling that way. And, finally opened up those scriptures to read them, where I realized the context was the resurrection, the future resurrection of the body. And at the future resurrection of the body, when this mortal puts on immortality, then will come about the saying, "Oh, death,
where is your sting?
Where is your sting?" And I was like, "Oh, good. I can feel the sting now."
Yeah.
Knowing that it's going to go away completely in the resurrection when our bodies are reunited with our souls.
That's so good. It's okay. Yeah. The, you know, people even years later, you know, they'll have a thought or something will remind them, or something will come across their remembrance, and, they'll respond with weeping and tears, and that's okay.
Yep.
That's okay. I tell people it's okay to cry. And, the fact that Jesus has overcome the grave and has overcome sin and death, doesn't mean you shouldn't still feel the pain and grief of death. And so it's okay to cry. We don't sorrow like those who have no hope. We don't despair because we know that Christ has risen and that we will rise again. But it's okay to grieve and cry, and we need to allow people the space to do that and be there with them and walk alongside them. So, thanks, Brian, for coming in and talking about this difficult subject. And, we hope to be a help to others and give them hope as we respond to those in our midst and in our family who are going through this suffering. And so I hope that has been a help.
Well, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share a little bit of our story and some of the things that we've learned along the way. And Michelle and I, we just love to minister and care for people. And so our phones are open to those in our church family, especially who may have more questions or just need a shoulder to cry on and someone to talk to. So don't be shy to call us.
Yeah. You never have to feel like you're bothering us.
Mm-mm.
So this is going to be this is our next to last podcast for the semester. We're going to do one more after this. We'll come back in the fall, but we're going to take a break for the summer.
Thanks for listening to Family of Faith. This podcast is a production of Family Ministries at Faith Bible Church in Spokane, Washington. Feel free to share. We only ask that you do not alter the content in any way and that you do not charge for it. Visit us at fbchurch.org for more resources, articles, and information about our ministries.